Because your whole balance is based on that big
Thank you. Annabelle. All right, good evening, good evening. Glad to see everybody. Welcome. Everybody, open your Bibles to Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Obviously, up to this point, we've covered through chapter 8, and I've just got to jump right in because we're going to cover four chapters tonight, and we're in the fourth discourse of the book, so there are four discourses, and so this one is really all about embracing life. So the first section of this discourse is, despite life's mysteries, life is something that should be enjoyed. We can't figure it all out, but life is something that should be enjoyed. I'd like to read beginning in chapter 8 and verse 16, which is actually really where this thought starts. Chapter 8, beginning in verse 16 says, "When I gave my heart to know wisdom and to see the task which has been done on earth, on the earth, even though one should never sleep day or night, and I saw every work of God, I concluded that a man cannot discover the work which has been done under the sun. Even though man should seek laboriously, he will not discover. And though the wise man should say, 'I know,' he cannot discover. For I have taken all this to my heart and explained it, that righteous men, wise men, and their deeds are in the hand of God. Man does not know whether it will be love or hatred. Anything awaits him." So no matter how painstakingly we might try to examine life, even if we lose sleep trying to figure it all out, and I'm sure Solomon did that, we can't. We can't figure out why certain things happen. We can't figure out what's going to happen tomorrow. Anything awaits us. And there's a couple of very practical lessons that we can take away from this. One being, don't be overly confident about future plans. James talked about that in James chapter 4, when he said, "Come now, you who say, you know, today or tomorrow, we're going to go and we're going to make a profit," and so forth. You know, that's not our place to say. He says at the end of this, in verse 15, this quote I have on the screen, we ought to say, "If the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that." That should be our attitude. We don't know what's going to happen. And Jesus also said, and this is another lesson we can get from all of this, Jesus said in Matthew 6, "So do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will take care of itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own." So that's another lesson we can glean from what Solomon is saying here in Ecclesiastes 9. So we cannot control life under the sun. God is our only hope. That's really the conclusion that I would push us to. God is our only hope, not this world. Back in our passage here in Ecclesiastes 9, verses 2 through 6, it's better to be alive than dead. It's kind of a shocking passage in view of some things he said earlier, like in chapter 4. So he's giving us a different perspective here. He's basically saying here, no matter how much effort a righteous person makes in serving God, in the end, he dies just like the person who's never made the slightest effort to serve God at all. You might look at that and say, well, that doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem like it should be that way. Now keep in mind, Solomon is only looking at life under the sun. He's not considering the afterlife in what he's examining here. But we just look at it. In the end, no matter how much you know, how hard you work trying to serve God, you're still just going to die. You're still just going to die, just like the wicked person who doesn't care about God at all. He makes the point in verse 4 that it's better to be a living dog than a dead lion. What's the point? Well, you know, dogs are obviously lesser creatures than lions in many ways, but even more so back then, you know, they weren't pets like they are today and everything. They were just scavengers, and they were very pitiable animals. It's still better to be alive and be a dog than to be dead and be a lion. And the lesson is obvious. Even if life isn't that great and it's not always so wonderful, it's still better to be alive than dead. Are there bad things to experience? Absolutely. But there are good things to experience along with the bad. And those who are dead cannot experience either the good or the bad. They cannot experience anything involving life under the sun. Verses 7 through 9, I know I'm moving at a quick pace. "Enjoy life while you're still alive. Eat and drink with joy," Solomon says. "Treat every day like it's a special occasion. Enjoy your wife. This is your portion of life and of your labor." It's kind of refreshing to get to these verses in this book because it's been such a negative book in so many ways. But, you know, it's so uplifting to realize that we can enjoy this life. He's not saying just, you know, make pleasure the end all of your existence. That would be hedonism. That would be sinful. But he's saying that we do need to embrace the pleasures that God has given us to enjoy, and to enjoy them fully and without guilt. Hey, sometimes we almost feel guilty. I do. I feel guilty if I ever am not working, if I'm not busy, if I'm not productive. You know, Brian helped me out with that sermon. He talked about laziness. Sometimes we struggle with that guilt. Let me ask you a question. Why is it that some Christians find it so hard to just enjoy the pleasures of this life? Phil.
One of the things I think is what Paul said, you know, God had done so much for him and given him so much grace, he felt totally indebted. And he wanted to do all that he could at the time left in his life
right.
to serve him in that way. So
right.
we feel indebted as well and want to do.
Because we feel indebted and almost feel like, well, I'm wasting time doing things I enjoy when I should be painstakingly pursuing, you know, evangelism or you know, memorizing Bible passages or praying or something. Yeah, that's a good point. John?
So the thing is, when you step outside of those doors back into the world, and a lot of times people will go, oh, I don't want to do that. Oh, I don't want to move the fear. I might be going down that wrong path. Instead of just going, man, what a great day.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then they just get, because they've just been hammered.
That's a great point. That's a great point, John.
Instead of going, look at creation.
Yeah, amen. And I'm going to kind of talk about that a little bit later. A lot of it has to do with our perspective and what we emphasize. And emphasizing too much negative, then we just kind of live a negative life that we don't allow ourselves to feel any joy. That's a great point. Let's move forward now. Despite life's mysteries, this next section is, despite life's mysteries, be active, be involved in life, take part. Don't be paralyzed just because you can't figure things out. Because it can paralyze you. It really can drive you batty. Look in chapter 9 and verse 10. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might, for there is no activity or planning or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol, where you're going. Sheol is the realm of the dead. That's where we're all headed. You know, we have a lot to accomplish in this short life. A lot to do, so we better get busy. Get busy and work our hardest at whatever it is that we're good at. And that's a blessing. And Jesus made a similar point about serving God in John 9. He said, we must work the works of Him who sent me as long as it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. There's a time coming when we're not going to be able to get anything done because we're going to be dead. So this is the time for us to be busy working. In general, and in that passage, John 9, specifically working for the Lord. However, balance that. Balance that with what we just talked about. Allow yourself to enjoy the pleasures of this life as well. Verses 11 and 12, I'm going to read that back in Ecclesiastes 9. I again saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift and the battle is not to the warriors, and neither is bread to the wise nor wealth to the discerning, nor favor to men of ability. For time and chance overtake them all. Moreover, man does not know his time. Like fish caught in a treacherous net and birds trapped in a snare. So the sons of men are ensnared at an evil time when it suddenly falls on them. Though this world is arranged so that most often the battle is won by the strong, and most often the race is won by the swift and so forth, that doesn't always happen. God has made this world so that time and chance are interwoven into the fabric of this universe. And so we can't always count on being the best at something means we're always going to be successful. We can't trust in ourselves for success. It's impossible to take into account all the different factors. You may be the fastest runner on the planet, and then you rip a hamstring halfway into the race, and it's over. And it might be over, your entire career might be over at that point. The reason God made the world this way is, as I said, so that we may learn to trust Him and not ourselves. Now, verse 11 is a great verse to disprove Calvinism. That states, at least classical Calvinism, that there is no such thing as free will. God has already decided everything before the world began. He's in control of every tiny detail of every single thing. No time and chance do happen to them all. However, we need to realize in the context of the book at large that Solomon is looking at life under the sun. And he's not saying that God is totally uninvolved in certain areas of life. That, well, there's time and chance where God isn't involved in those areas. No, the overall idea in Ecclesiastes is God is involved in all of our lives. And He intends for everything to be used for a good purpose. That's a message we find in many other places in the Bible, like Romans 8 and verse 28, that all things work together for good to those who love God and to those who are called according to His purpose. Well, a lot of bad things happen, but we can use those things. God wants us to use those things intentionally for good. But time and chance, whatever tragedies may befall someone through time and chance, God allows those things to happen, but He intends for those things to have a purpose in our service to Him. Verses 13 through 18, humble wisdom is often ignored and disregarded. Solomon tells a story here. Really, it seems to illustrate the point of verse 11, that those with wisdom don't always succeed in life. And he says that there was this small city, had very few men in it to defend it, and a great king came and attacked it. And how was the king, how was the city delivered? One poor wise man. Through his wisdom, the city was delivered. What was the people's reaction to that poor wise man? Forgot him. They didn't listen to anything he had to say. Besides, he's poor. Poor people were totally disregarded. Didn't matter what they did or said. And so Solomon says basically that he learned that as superior as wisdom is to strength, it is often totally disregarded because it's not loud and flashy like strength and power often are. That's an ironic story, really. It's kind of the opposite of what you would hope. Wisdom is so wonderful, but the world doesn't value it. It's just kind of backwards. If it's so wonderful, why doesn't the world see it? They don't. Most people in our culture value strength over wisdom. They're far more attracted to power and to riches and strength than they are to wisdom. Just take for an example of this the kind of people that our society glorifies. What kind of people do you see on the banners and in the commercials? A lot of times it's the celebrities. Oh, I want that product. If that guy's using it, I know it's a good product. I want to use it too. Well, because he's rich and makes lots of money, that's why you want to do it. Doesn't have anything to do with wisdom at all. Our culture also pays attention to the arrogant loudmouths instead of to those who are wise, who often conduct themselves in a kind of a quiet, meek manner. And that's a shame that it is that way. But it is that way. Just a moment, we'll get to some things y'all can help me with in comments. Verses 1 through 3 of chapter 10, a little foolishness spoils much wisdom. Let's look at chapter 10 and verse 1. Dead flies make a perfumer's oil stink. So a little foolishness is weightier than wisdom and honor. Kind of have to think about that. Flies are small, but flies can ruin a whole batch of really expensive perfume. And the lesson is, as he said, that a little foolishness is weightier than wisdom and honor. The consequences of doing evil outweigh the results of doing good. It might just sometimes take one moment of carelessness in our morality to undo a lot of good we've done. Can y'all think of any examples? You don't have to be specific about people. I just mean in general. certain areas of life that can be totally affected by maybe just one small sin.
School.
School.
You could build a good reputation as a student, but you cheat once.
Great example. Cheat once, your reputation is gone.
Even if you're speculated of cheating also.
Yes, very good. Other examples, Debbie?
We see in the political realm, people that are, you know,
yeah.
This is a great person, has a great reputation, and then one thing will come up from something they did when they were maybe in high school.
Yeah, right.
And
we see it all the time, over and over. It's like a broken record. Happens over and over. And then they may be out of a career for the rest of their life. Absolutely. So, I mean, we can think of lots of examples of this. And even on a smaller scale, you know, I love the concept of the love bank. The love bank in marriage is this idea that when you do things that are kind and loving, you're making deposits into your spouse's love bank. When you do things that are bad, you know, do things that are unthoughtful, that are rude, so forth, you're taking a big deposit out of their love bank. And you want to keep that love balance pretty high. Well, the sad reality is the negative things we do have much more of a withdrawal than the good things we do to make deposits. You can make 10 really great deposits, do one really stupid thing, and now you kind of got to start all over. You might even be in the negative. And so it works in that way as well. Verses 4 through 7, he then talks about, foolish rulers. Solomon talks a lot about foolish rulers. He says, if a ruler gets angry with you, don't leave your place. A soft response will prevent great offenses. Don't run from the problem. Confront it with grace. Proverbs 15 tells us a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up strife. And that is a principle that is true whether you're talking to some authority, like a king, or a boss, or a divisive brother in Christ who's out to attack you. Don't fight fire with fire. It's not the Christian way. A harsh word turns away. I mean, a gentle answer turns away wrath. Boy, we almost got that one totally wrong. Well, I'm skipping over just a little bit here. Verses 8 through 11. Take precautions when you do a job. When a person undertakes any endeavor, there are inherent dangers in just about everything that we do, whether he's digging a pit or breaking down a wall or moving stones or splitting wood, or for all you snake charmers out there, if he's charming a snake. I mean, there are some pretty obvious dangers with that one. The point is to take precautions and to do it ahead of time, not when it's too late. You know, wisdom is great, but sometimes we wait until it's too late to use it. And many tragedies result when we do that. And not just physical tragedies, but we can think of all sorts of examples. Can y'all help me out and think of any examples of how sometimes we just wait a little too long to try to incorporate wisdom and then we regret it? Terry?
Anytime you say, I should have.
I should have.
I should have done this.
Oh, I should have. I should have stopped. I should have slowed down. Should have thought of that. We rush headlong into something without just thinking about it, praying about it. You know, we need to pray. A lot of this is resolved, but by praying ahead of time. All right, Joe, and then Jared.
I think one thing is like when a family member passes away, and it's kind of like Terry's talking about, I should have. There's a deep sense of regret that you. You know, I should have said I love you. I should have resolved some issue between, whatever the circumstance might be.
Yeah, that's true. The principle, I think, could have in a general way application even to that. Jared?
With our kids, we can teach them a lesson by not punishing behavior that needs to be punished or something like that, spoiling them in some way. That might have continuous consequences.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot. It becomes hard to undo
mm-hmm.
once they've got this lesson, this bad lesson.
Yeah.
now we've got to figure out how to correct it.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot harder to correct than if we hadn't made that mistake in the first place.
That's right. So it's really a lesson about prevention and thinking ahead, and that can apply to parenting and all sorts of things. So that's great. Let's, Phil?
I said this once a long time ago, but as Christians, or as people in general, when our relationships don't work right, we have a tendency to want to go and try to fix them. And it may, if you have a bad relationship, had a bad relationship with a parent, and you get older and you realize you're getting older and you want to fix that before it's too late, I tell people, as important as that relationship is, you should never take the place of the relationship you have with God. That's the one you really need to keep fixed and keep working through.
Amen.
Because you only have a certain amount of time left here to prepare to meet God.
Yeah.
And to be with Him. And I think a lot of people get so focused down here on just the relationships down here that they try to fix these, they run out of time, and they don't spend any time trying to work through their relationship with God.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Scott, and then we'll move on.
Counting the cost, we sometimes don't take the necessary steps to analyze what we're actually doing.
Yeah. Yeah, count the cost, and Jesus talked about that in Luke chapter 14. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
The sillies, they don't put off till tomorrow what you can do today.
Don't put off till tomorrow what you can do today. Very good.
Because many times tomorrow doesn't come.
That's right.
That conversation or thing that you want to get done never gets done.
That's right. Good point. I had to skip something I really wanted to talk about, verse 10. This idea of sharpening that blade. It's wiser to sharpen your blade when you're using an axe and take the time to do that than it is to go out there and just hack and hack and hack at a tree with a dull blade. It's just a principle of life, you know, in the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. The 7th habit isn't a new habit. It's sharpen the saw. That takes work. And we need to know that as Christians. But I wasn't going to talk about it. There I went. I talked about it. So verses 12 through 15, a fool's speech and labor. Here he basically says the fool just runs his mouth too much and would have been better off if he had said nothing. He ruins himself. He destroys himself because he doesn't know when to close his mouth. Well, I can't really add much to that. It's pretty straightforward. Then he goes right into talking again about foolish rulers. And maybe there's a connection. In verses 16 through 20 there, he says, "Woe to a nation with a childish king and hedonistic rulers who love drinking and partying and think money solves all the problems. Blessed is a nation who has wise rulers. Laziness leads to ruin." That's a summary of those verses. By the way, let me say, it is helpful to learn how to summarize. You don't understand something until you can summarize it in a few short sentences. I encourage you to try to exercise that. But, you know, this is such a good passage to remind me of what Paul told Timothy to do. I believe it was in 1 Timothy 2, to pray for all men. But specifically, he mentions praying for our rulers and to pray for them that they have wisdom and don't lead like this. In verse 20 of chapter 10, let's read that. Chapter 10 and verse 20, "Furthermore, in your bedchamber do not curse a king, and in your sleeping rooms do not curse a rich man, for a bird of the heavens will carry the sound, and the winged creature will make the matter known." Such a fascinating verse here. Often we think nobody's going to find out when we gossip about them in private. And somehow they find out. And we go, how did that person find that out? And in fact, if a person finds out something and you didn't expect them to, and you say, "How'd you learn that?" What do they sometimes say? "A little birdie told me." Guess where that comes from? This very verse. That very verse. Yeah, absolutely. So the lesson for us is just not just regarding kings or rich men, but anybody. Be very careful what we say about people behind their backs, because they can end up finding out when you didn't expect it. Chapter 11, verses 1 through 6. The message here: in life, do not hold back. So in verse 1 of chapter 11, a well-known verse: "Cast your bread on the surface of the waters." Some versions say, cast your bread on many waters, for you will find it after many days." This is likely language about maritime trade. I always say that word wrong. Maritime. I think I said it a little better that time. And so Solomon had a navy. He would send his ships out. It would go as far as Tarshish and maybe not make it back for a few years. But they would come back with much wealth. And it seems like that's the basis for this language here. The lesson is pretty simple. We simply cannot foresee all the effects an action may have over the course of our lives. So we just need to work hard, try different things, be generous to others, and it will come back to you. That's essentially what this passage is saying. It will come back to you in one form or another. If you try to wait till conditions are perfect, he goes on to say, like a farmer waiting for the weather to be perfect, which, by the way, is totally unpredictable. If you wait till, you know, everything's perfect to do your sowing and then do your reaping, you're never going to do anything. We might say if you wait till the planets are aligned, you know, it's never going to happen. And so the lesson is, just do it. Just work. Does that mean sometimes you're going to fail because conditions aren't perfect? Well, yes, but don't let that stop you from doing it anyway. If you do nothing, you're guaranteed to fail anyway. Just such a practical message, such a practical book. Chapter 11, verse 5 is a beautiful verse. Just as you do not know the path of the wind and how bones are formed in the womb of the pregnant woman, so you do not know the activity of God who makes all things. Even with all the science today, they don't know. They haven't figured out the single cell. They know some things about it. They haven't figured out everything about how a child grows and the whole childbirth process. All of that is so still beyond us. We can't figure that stuff out. We can't figure out all this stuff about God. And it's kind of liberating to just admit that. Instead of struggling to think you have to figure it all out, but you can't. Now let's kind of go back to the idea of casting our bread on many waters, and I just want to ask you all a question, because I'm going really super fast, and I think I'm doing okay with my time. What might prevent us from casting our bread on many waters? From just this idea of just kind of being generous and trying lots of different things and just kind of trusting. What might prevent us from doing that, Joe?
What
you expected. Yeah. I tried that casting bread on many waters business, and it didn't help. It didn't get me anywhere, so I'm not doing that anymore. I want to keep it all close here. Yes?
I think something is when you overstretch yourself. So maybe you try to reach as many people as you can a couple times and then realize you haven't taken care of yourself and your family at all.
Good point.
Because you've been trying to help everyone else.
Okay, yeah.
And so a few times after that, and you're like, well, now I just need to focus on me. So.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that is a balance. Absolutely.
And I think also, especially if you are taking care of everybody else first, if you are in a time of need and they, like Mr. Joe said, they don't give anything back, or at least not anything that you were expecting, that can be really upsetting to you.
Yeah. People are unpredictable. As unpredictable as anything. And you expect maybe my helping others will somehow be a blessing to me. That's maybe not why you do it, but you work hard and try to help others, and nothing good comes in return. I will say, however, generally speaking, people have a very strong sense of reciprocity. And if they've, you know, if they've been treated well, people in general tend to respond well to that. Good. What else might prevent us from casting our bread on many waters? I'll take one more answer. Debbie?
The fear of failure.
Yeah.
You know, you try something, like you said, you know, if the planets all line up, well,
right.
If you wait for that, you're not, you know, like you said, nothing's going to get done.
Sure.
If I heard the saying, what is it, that God can't get us going, but he can, once we get going, he can move us along, you know. Like,
okay.
It's easier to move something that's already going.
Yeah.
So we just need to be working at something, you know.
Sure.
If people don't have a job and you can't find a job, then I say, then go volunteer somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, because somebody will see you working hard and may say, hey, you're a great volunteer. I got a job for you.
Yeah.
But do something. You know,
bump into stuff. Get out there. Get busy. Yeah, and, you know, fear of failure is such a common fear. Mm-hmm. And we may not even realize it. And, you know, I do a lot of reading on, you know, self-motivation and personal growth and those sorts of things. And personal failure is just, it's such an inhibitor of us doing anything. We like to do what's safe. And casting our bread on many waters doesn't feel safe because that bread's going out. It's like, bye, hope you come back, you know. And God has a way of taking care of us in that circumstance. So let's turn our attention now to this third section of this discourse. Live well in view of what's coming. In verses 7 and 8, he's saying, enjoy the good days while they last. In other words, there's bad days coming when you get older. So enjoy the days that are good while you're still young enough to enjoy them. I'm purposefully not going to really get into that as much as I'd like, because I might be preaching on this on Sunday. I haven't quite decided about that, but I might be talking about enjoying life on Sunday, so I don't want to steal my own thunder. Verses 9 and 10, enjoy the days of your youth is kind of that same idea. There's a lot of balance in here about that. He's not saying just you know, let loose and just, you know, dive in. He is saying enjoy the world and dive in that sense, but he's not saying to give up God, obviously. This next little subsection here, chapter 12, 1 through 7, remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the decline of your body and of your mind, when you no longer enjoy the things of this life, before your body returns to the dust, before your spirit goes back to God who gave it. We need to be careful about reading too much into, you know, Solomon's talking about the afterlife. Solomon is viewing this life under the sun in this book. But he is talking about the importance of remembering the Lord. Now, in this section, Solomon uses a series of figures, like the sun and the moon and the stars being darkened, doors being shut, a golden bowl being broken, almond blossoms, which are white, like hair becomes when you become older, a grasshopper that is one of the most agile of all little critters, and it just drags himself along as kind of... These are pictures to represent the breaking down of the systems of the body and the failure of its members. But his point is clear, and that is, don't wait until life is over and you have nothing left with which to serve God to remember your Creator. Do it while you have youth and energy and vitality and opportunity. And when he says remember your Creator, he's not just saying think about the Lord. He's saying keep Him ever before you as the most important thing in your life. Learn these lessons while you're young. Don't wait until your life is wasted to see how you should have lived. Now, certainly if a person does that and turns to the Lord, God will forgive him. But look at the opportunity that was wasted. Look at all the opportunities, years of opportunities. And let me point this out. It is ironic that the best that this life has to offer us at the conclusion of our life under the sun is what? Pain and difficulty. That's pretty vain. That's pretty futile. What should that drive us to do? Serve the Lord. This life isn't going to get us anywhere in the end. It's just going to lead to more difficulty. And I have so much respect for those who are living those difficult years, gracefully serving the Lord. And we often don't realize, as you know, who are a little younger, at what they go through, what some of y'all go through, and the pains that you go through just to do life on a daily basis. It's a thing to be honored. It's a thing to be respected. But you can maybe relate to some of the things here in a way that some of us can't relate to yet. Now, many young people see serving God as a killjoy. I don't want to do that. I want to have fun. What would you say to somebody who said that? What would you say to some kid who just thinks, that's just boring and dumb. I just want to have fun, and I don't want to know all this Christianity stuff. I want to have fun in life. What would you say? Ma'am? I didn't hear you.
You're very short-sighted.
You're very short-sighted.
You're not looking to the long-range plan.
That's good. It is short-sighted.
I mean, come from a place of understanding, though, because if you approach a kid and be like, oh, you're short-sighted, you don't understand the rest of life, they're going to be like, I don't care, let me have fun now.
Let me ask a question.
They come from a place of,
yeah,
oh,
that's
I
right.
understand where you're coming from.
That's right.
But this is what's going to happen, and then calmly explain it to them and say, I understand, I was you once.
Yeah,
I get that.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is how
that's a good
changed.
Point. So, you know, we can have plenty of fun. Young people can have plenty of fun without doing bad stuff. In fact, and we kind of talked about this, I think, on Sunday. Yes, God requires us to live within His perimeters of His will. But He does that for our benefit as well. It's good for us to do that. And our life will actually be more blessed if we live that way. We can enjoy life more. And just look at how people's lives are ruined by sin all the time. So I like to encourage young people to know you can have plenty of fun as a young person without doing wicked things. Final conclusion, verses 8 through 14. So let's read verse 8 first. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, all is vanity. When did he say that before here? Very beginning, chapter 1 and verse 2. So he's come back full circle. He's kind of indicating here that he's ready to kind of wrap things up. And now we don't just see that statement, but we see all of the evidence that he gives to back up that statement. And when the book started, you might have said, vanity of vanities, boy, that just sounds negative. Solomon. And now we're going, yeah, I agree. Life under the sun is... it's wind.
I think that what under the sun.
Life under the sun, right.
Is more to this.
That's right. That's right. And that's where he's going, isn't it, Mr. Bill? He says in verses 9 and 10 that, and he speaks of himself in the third person, that he's a sage that has really worked hard to find this wisdom and teach it. He's not just anybody. He's got credibility. We need to listen to what he says. And then in verses 11 and 12, the words of wise men are like goads, and masters of these collections are like well-driven nails. They are given by one shepherd. But beyond this, my son, be warned. The writing of many books is endless, and excessive devotion to books is wearying to the body. I used to love that passage as a kid because I hated reading books. But he's not just saying that. He's saying, make sure that the kind of things you're wanting to learn are true wisdom. Don't waste your life studying stuff that's just a bunch of stuff that's no good, which there's a lot of that out there, isn't there? And he calls these words of wisdom like a goad that moves an animal in a certain direction. Aren't goads kind of painful too? The words of the wise are like goads. They move us in the right direction, and it might be painful. And they're given by the one shepherd. Who's the one shepherd? Now, in this context, it's God. It's Jehovah. It's Jehovah, I think, that's being referred to there. And also the words of wisdom are described as nails that are firmly in place. Well-driven nails. They're not going anywhere. The words of God are... they are stable. They will not change. They are reliable. And then we come to the grand conclusion, 13 and 14, the conclusion when all has been heard is fear God and keep His commandments. Because this applies to every person. Some versions say this is man's all. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. Sometimes we treat it like this is the only time the book says this. It's not. This may be the clearest time that he says it, but he's made these points throughout the book. But now, what a perfect way to summarize the point that he's trying to come to in talking about the meaninglessness of life under the sun. It is meaningless. That can be changed. The world is bent. It can't be straightened out. Therefore, serve God. Seek for something better than what we have in this life, and enjoy what we can that God has blessed us with in this life. It's a perfect way to end the book by reminding us that one day we will all stand before God and that our only hope of any profit in the end comes not from this world, but from being right in the sight of our Creator and the one who is beyond the sun. Hope the study of Ecclesiastes has been helpful. Sorry, we're out of time. Please read through page 219A for Sunday, and Brian will be starting us off in the Song of Solomon. So look forward to that.